This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It's a great pleasure to speak to Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. It's traveling without leaving Connecticut. It's wonderful. Judy is in County Kildare, 25 miles outside of central Dublin. She's at Maynooth University, which is alive with students all across the EU, all across the world, looking at themes that are the response to the troubles of the early 21st century. Climate, yes, but also geostrategic failure when it comes to dealing with the Russian bear. And while I've been paying attention to the responses of Judy's colleagues and will continue, I want to come and ask generally how her sense of Ireland and the war in Europe. Ireland is an integral and vital member of the EU, as well as participating in all these discussions about meeting quotas for the future for the people and also for the rest of the EU. Ireland is a very well-educated population. They do very well with American business and European business. But, Judy, is there a generalization about how Dublin regards the war, which now is in the second year, and the two Caudillos are in Moscow conferring with each other how they're going to defeat NATO? Does Ireland have a general opinion?
General opinions are very difficult to gauge, but just being here, you see the number of Ukrainian flags hanging out from windows in small villages and towns. That's the first thing. And secondly, this is a small country of 3.5 million people. If you look at the map, it's quite small. They've taken in at least 60,000 Ukrainians. And not only that, but very well-off the business community have actually, the Ukrainian refugees they've taken in, they've said, okay, bring over your grandparents, bring over your parents, we will look after them. And so they have actually given them security, education, safety, all the medical services and everything. We have come nearly to a crunch point because Ireland has a huge housing crisis and housing has become incredibly expensive. The students here, some of them have to commute 2 hours to get to the campus, and they themselves are complaining about the very high rents, lack of availability of accommodation. So this is a big urgent issue for the Irish government. Build new houses. Don't build up resentment with the Ukrainian refugees who are being really looked after. So at the moment, it's full support for the Ukrainians. But I wonder how long this can be sustained as long as the housing crisis continues.
To your colleague Martin Ale, who has some rough things to say about the EU and its conduct over the years. He said that it's weak in hard power and emphasizes the soft power elements, wonderful, but its weakness in hard power may have invited Russian adventurism. Is that, can we explore that? What would European hard power look like? You're very good in spending money. European Union is very good at integrating. You just mentioned all the students in Ireland. This is the strength of the EU, the future. But what is hard power now?
The Russian attack on Ukraine has actually shaken the European Union out of its comfort zone of soft power. The EU always believed soft power would be the panacea for ills. Pour money in. And now we're coming to the stage that they're in a transition from the old soft power tools of money, investments and so on, and development aid, to hard power. The last couple of days, the European Council, that represents the member states of the EU, agreed an enormous package of supplying huge numbers of military equipment to Ukraine, and they're offering training and so on. This is a big change, and the EU agreed on this. They don't want to use the hard power yet because it wouldn't get a consensus, but it's creeping towards it. But this would mean actually becoming a military power as well. They're not there yet. It's time perhaps that they did if they want to defend their values and actually have a real policy towards Eastern Europe where we started this conversation.
Martinelli is also extremely unhappy with the sanctions regime advanced by the EU and the US and the UN. But the sanctions regime, he says it's a joke the way that Russia is using Armenia and Kazakhstan to defeat the sanctions regime. Is that an issue in Brussels? I report on it every week. They not only use Yerevan and Nur Sultan, they also use Delhi. They use all kinds of in-between states in order to defeat the sanctions in the first place.
The European Union, the institutions, the leaders of the EU institutions are completely well aware of this. I mean, if the sanctions really worked, they would have had a great negative impact on Russia already. But we have to face the reality. We saw this in the Balkan Wars of the 1990s. Countries who are sanctioned always circumvent. And also there are many countries who want to gain profit from war and sanctions. And Russia is certainly getting this help. The EU can stretch the sanctions limit as far as they like, but having it watertight is absolutely near impossible. They are doing what they can, and they're aware of the big gaps. But as I say, nothing is 100% waterproof when it comes to sanctions. There's too much money to be made.
We're focusing on the Eastern Partnership, those states still in it. Belarus would be in it, except for the bullies in Minsk. However, there are questions here. Thomas Duval's questions are especially helpful to me because they're so specific. He says, in order to do enough for Eastern Partnership, you must worry about the Georgian farmer who's worried about losing his Russian market. You must worry about the Moldovan pensioner who's worried about her gas bill and is there going to be adequate resources for the winter? Those are wonderful questions. We could continue the list. Are they part of the conversation about the details of joining the EU?
Publicly, no. Privately, as Tom Duval says, some of these conversations are. But Tom Duval has put his finger on it. It's these little things, the human element, that matters. You don't want the big picture, the institutional picture, and more regulations and laws and procedures and processes. It's a human element that does get forgotten. And this is absolutely crucial for the Eastern Partnership. The right to education, the right that your apples won't be destroyed, the right to energy supplies, the right to just... This is the other definition of security. Hard power is just not about military. Hard power is about human security as well. And this has to be now internalized and integrated into EU policy towards Eastern Europe.
One of the things I most enjoy about your questions to your colleagues is that Poland is always right, very straightforward. No doubts whatsoever. Defeat Russia, then we'll take care of everything else. I have a response this week from Bidzina Lebanitsa. This is the Georgian Institute of Politics. A very helpful identification that the Black Sea is to be the front line of the future between the European Union and the imperial powers of Russia and Beijing, of Moscow and Beijing. Is that a general understanding that we're looking at the 21st century's front line?
I hope we are not looking at the 21st century's front line, because if we are, we go down this road of accordion solitaire and playing into the hands of a Russian new imperial influence in these five eastern countries. The front line, when all this war is over, the EU will have to decide, what does Europe mean? How far will it stretch? And how far will it be able to integrate, leaving aside the whole question of membership, integrate these countries into the trade, the democratic, the political, the social infrastructure elements of Europe. This is what's at stake. If you go down, if you use the language of frontline and an iron curtain, we have lost this part of Europe and we have given it on a silver platter to President Putin.
Finally, Judy, because here we are in the first full day of spring. My crocuses are up, my irises are starting, the tulips are 4 or 5 inches tall. But Ireland has a climate completely unknown to me. What do you see around you in Maynooth? Is everything in bloom yet or is it promising?
The grass is so green. I now understand when I'm asked in Germany where I come from, I say from Ireland, the Grüne Insel, the Green Island. Well, no wonder it rains the whole time. But it's lush. The flowers are out. The daffodils are in full bloom, especially around the grounds of Maynooth University and along the terraces. It's actually very beautiful. And then, there's, as I said earlier, the Ukrainian flag gives us a bit of extra colour as well. It'd be nice if there was a bit of blue sky,
yes.
But that will come out over the course of the day.
Judy Dempsey, Strategic Europe, on location in her native Ireland for Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.